Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday morning. It's April 29th, 37 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City under mostly sunny skies. We've got Heber City reporting 39 degrees. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Yes, we're starting off on a chilly note out there with mostly clear skies across the area. Those chilly temperatures will not stick around for too long, though. With all that sunshine that we're going to have today, we're going to be looking at those temperatures warming on up. We should be seeing our highs topping out into the mid to upper 50s for us in Park City this afternoon. And in the Heber Valley, we should see our temperatures climbing into the low to mid 60s. So overall, a little bit on the warmer side this afternoon, but make sure you grab those jackets and at least the sweatshirts as you head out this morning, as it is a little on the chilly side. Now, as we go throughout this afternoon, most of us will remain on the dry side, but I do want to mention there is a very tiny chance of an isolated pop-up shower for our higher elevations. So if you're around the Park City area, don't be surprised if you see a brief shower or sprinkle that comes through. It won't last long, but just a very tiny chance of a pop-up due to just a little bit of moisture and the elevation helping to create some lift. But otherwise, it should be a pretty nice day overall. Now, as we go into tonight, those clouds will thicken up again across the area, and by the time you wake up tomorrow morning, we're going to make up to some rain showers probably in the Heber Valley with temperatures in the mid to upper 30s. And in Park City, we could have a little mixture of a few rain or snow showers as we kick off the day on your Wednesday. That's because a new front is going to be making its way in from the north. It'll start to move into northern Utah after midnight. And so do expect the potential of some wet roads here as we kick off our Wednesday morning commute. So kind of plan ahead, give yourself a few extra minutes just because of that. But otherwise, as we go throughout the day, we will see a decent chance of showers across the area. And we'll see those temperatures only warming up to near 50 degrees in Park City, so cooler as we go throughout the day on Wednesday afternoon. And in the Heber Valley, we'll see our highs only into the mid to upper 50s. Now, once we get past the Wednesday storm system, we get another nice little break that moves in. So our Thursday forecast will feature plenty of sunshine in Park City. Temperatures starting off around freezing on Thursday morning, but we'll climb to about 60 degrees by Thursday afternoon with that sunshine. And we're looking at those temperatures in the upper 30s climbing into the mid 60s by Friday for Park City. Now in the Heber Valley, we're looking at partly cloudy skies as we go into your Thursday with highs in the upper 60s. We'll see those highs climbing into the low 70s by Friday, so a nice end to the week with lots of sunshine returning across the area. Now I mentioned that that break would also be fairly brief because it only lasts for Thursday into Friday. By the time we get into the weekend, we've got a stronger storm system that will be approaching. Now, for our Saturday, that'll just mean the chance of a few isolated afternoon showers popping up, highs in the mid-60s in Park City and highs in the low to mid-70s in the Heber Valley. But Sunday, that's going to mean a good chance of rain and maybe even a couple of isolated rumbles of thunder with temperatures climbing in the 60s for highs and lows into the 40s. So let's enjoy the nice weather today before more rain arrives tomorrow morning.
Okay. Thanks so much, Cedric.
Thank you.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott, along with Transportation Planning Director Carl Miller. Take a look at Wednesday's County Council meeting agenda, as well as the opening of this season's Bike Share program. The Executive Director of Women Inspired Network, Kristen Gunnerud, with details about their May meetup to help fill a Peace House transitional use. And board members from the Village Bicycle Project, James May, and Executive Director Joshua Popple, with details on their upcoming Park City Bike Drive. Well, taking a look at some local news now, the Park City Council overturned its decision to use ranked choice voting for the 2025 election. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports the reversal came during a special meeting just days after the council had asked to revisit the topic.
The Park City Council voted 3-2 during a special meeting Monday to rescind its move to use ranked choice voting in the 2025 election. Council members Bill Sirocco, Ed Parisian, and Jeremy Rubel voted to return to conventional plurality voting. Council members Ryan Dickey and Tana Tolley were in support of ranked choice voting. The council heard from more than 20 people during public comment, a majority of whom expressed support for keeping ranked choice voting, an alternative voting method that lets voters rank candidates by preference on their ballots. During the council meeting last week, Sirocco said he made a mistake by previously supporting ranked choice voting and called for the council to reconsider its March decision to try the method this election. Park City officials had to quickly schedule the special meeting as they only had until Wednesday to finalize their election process under state law. Park City Mayor Nan Worrell denounced the move at the start of Monday's special meeting.
Transparency and process have been key for me. And never in my 15 years on this dais have I been as ambushed as I felt last Thursday by Councilmember Sirocco. So I apologize to the people of Park City. This is not what you have every right to expect of us.
Tolley and Rubel's seats are on the ballot in November. Tolley has already said she plans to seek re-election. Rubel has not yet shared whether he'll run again. Sirocco's call to back out of ranked choice voting came 2 days after Dickey announced a run for mayor, as Worrell intends to step down after her term ends this year. Outside of Tolley and Dickey, no one else had publicly announced a campaign for city council or mayor as of April 28th. Dickey said Monday he was disappointed in the council's sudden decision to back out of ranked choice voting.
I think this process is disrespectful to our residents, disrespectful to our voters, drives distrust in our election.
Tolley advocated for ranked choice voting because it eliminates the primary election, which she says reduces costs for candidates due to the shorter campaign window. Sirocco previously cited research that showed Utah's ranked choice voting tabulation software, RCTAB, produced discrepancies when analyzing election results in Alaska. Officials with the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center, which owns the software, said the error was due to altered settings, and they remain confident that RCTAB produces correct results. Summit County Clerk Eve First also expressed confidence in the software and said it underwent a rigorous approval process at the state and federal levels. But Sirocco said after spending countless hours studying ranked choice voting, he doesn't see overwhelming benefits to using the alternative system.
I'm comfortable with saying this isn't an issue with the tabulating software, although it does introduce the question, does this additional complexity create the opportunity for there to be issues in an election? To me, on some levels, it feels like Bitcoin. I feel like I kind of understand it, but there's no way for me to help you understand it, and that is a problem.
In 2018, Utah legislators passed a bill allowing cities to try ranked choice voting through a pilot program. It's set to expire after the 2025 election, which Rubel and Sirocco cited as a reason to stick with conventional voting. Park City's election filing deadline will now open June 2nd and run through June 9th. There will be a primary election for mayor if there are more than three candidates. A primary will be necessary in the city council race if there are five or more candidates. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
The Summit County Council meets Wednesday, starting a work session at 3:30 in the studio with a preview. I have County Manager Shane Scott along with Transportation Planner Carl Miller. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see. The council will be getting a preview of the 2025 Summit County Fair. Any changes being planned here?
We do have some changes. We have another night of rodeo, which is going to be exciting. And we're coming a little earlier to council than we normally do. I think last year we felt like we didn't get on their calendar soon enough. So we're hoping they will participate. It's August 2nd through the 9th. We have a lot of exciting things to talk about with sustainability and some other excitement there around the fair. So talking about the fair makes me excited for summer. I think it's going to be a fun way to kick off council tomorrow.
Okay. Heber City has gone back to a in-person ticketing purchase for their rodeo and demolition tickets, saying that people might have a actual chance to get some of those. Is that something Summit County would be considering? I mean, do you hear those complaints from people that they just can't get those tickets anymore?
I haven't heard that, and that maybe that's something I need to talk to Tyler about. Tyler Orgel is our fair director. I've actually heard that around the Oakley Rodeo as well, that there's some demand issues, and they try to get the locals there to be able to buy some tickets. So something we'd like to. We're obviously excited to bring people to Colville, whether that's from the basin or other parts of the county. Or even we get a lot of people from Weaver County and in the valley as well. So we'd like to bring those folks in. But it is a very popular event. We always sell out. So maybe something I should follow up with Tyler on.
Okay. Carl, then at 4 o'clock, tour of the Colville Bike Share Station. Can you give us details here?
Yeah, we're really excited to start the next seasonal bike share. Took over the bike share. This is the seventh season that you have the bike share. Started as the first all-electric bike share in North America, and so we're really proud of our roots. A couple of years ago, the county took on the bike share by itself, so this will be an expansion of the bike share program, putting a station in Colville. Launch this season to coordinate with May is the National Bike Month. So really excited. We got beautiful weather on the horizon and excited to get out there on the bikes again.
So how many bike share stations will be in North Summit?
This will be the first one. We're really piloting this to see how it's going to go. We'll have last season we concluded with 23 bike share stations in the Snyderville Basin. We're looking to add three more, and so we're really looking at growth in the area. And really, our goal is to get a station within 1,000 feet of everybody, so everybody has the opportunity to ride the bike share station.
Yeah. So, is it helpful though just to have one station?
And this is really why it's a pilot test for Colville. We're going to see how this goes. We haven't had any stations outside of the Snyderville Basin, and so it's going to require a little bit of additional operations and additional logistics to make sure that station is intact and using and is serving the community. So at first, it'll just be a pilot test with the community, and we'll see how this goes from there. But we're really looking to expand in the Snyderville Basin with additional stations. We're also going to be changing our pricing strategy so that way it really is more community-based. We're looking at a model to reduce the seasonal pass prices. Last year, they were $150 for a seasonal pass. That's an all-you-can-ride pass. We're actually dropping that to $50. Not many things are going down in price right now, but we think if we can offer that at a much reduced price, we're really hoping that this becomes people's first choice for getting around the community.
Okay, and past that first half hour, then it's about $15 an hour to ride, 25 cents a minute?
25 cents a minute, yeah. So we're really looking at those first and last mile connections. You know, you're at lunch and you're at your work and you want to run to lunch or run some errands or just get around town, just enjoy the beautiful scenery. It is quite affordable for those first 30 minutes, and then it's 25 cents a minute after that.
And you've got the capacity to lower the prices because, right, that'll mean probably more people taking advantage of it?
Exactly. We really want to make sure that this people have the opportunity. A lot of people in the community I've talked to have never used the bike share, and reducing that price to a point where it doesn't make sense not to get an annual pass will really improve or increase people's willingness to try it, even if it's just for, you know, a run to the store or a run to, you know, restaurant at lunchtime.
So the station in Colville, where's it going to be?
It's right next to the courthouse.
All right, and how many bikes would be available?
There'll just be six. Again, it'll be a pilot test just to see how it goes. We haven't had a station outside of Snyderville, so it'll be a smaller station, but we're really excited to see how this goes and see if we can use this to eventually get stations throughout other communities in the county.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you heard from East Side folks? I mean, would they rather have buses than bikes?
I think we need to take a comprehensive approach to transportation. I don't think one mode is going to fulfill everybody's needs. So we really need to make sure that we have a multimodal approach, whether that's bikes, good sidewalks, good trails, bus options, and a full comprehensive set of transportation options.
Yeah, so have we even started to look at that, though, busing between North Summit and the Basin?
Yeah, I know High Valley Transit has taken a look at that. I can't speak to that too much. I don't want to give you any wrong information, but I know that they've really done a lot of analysis at this point to see what it would take to serve the entire community, and I know that they're working hard on that.
All right, so bike share season opens May 1?
May 1st.
Okay. And then you had mentioned some expansion in the Snyderville Basin. What are you proposing this season?
Yeah, we're really excited to put in a few new stations. The visitor center over next to the Richens building will have a station, and we're really hoping that'll be, especially as we get tourists to come into the area, they can try out the bikes, they can see what they're like, get a map of where those stations are, and hopefully this becomes, you know, their first choice for getting around the community as well. And we're looking to put back the Prospector Station, add a station in Frostwood and Kenyon's Village. And also, while we put it in at the very end of last year, really trying to promote the new station at the hospital. And so we're really expanding our routes. We've recently applied for a grant to get additional stations with the goal that, you know, everywhere we'll have a station within a close walkable distance.
All right, so you mentioned that you closed with 23 last season. You'll have how many this season?
If all goes to plan, we have definitive plans for three more, as well as we'll see what happens with the grant. We could be up to 30 stations by the end of year. We started with 15 stations just a couple years ago. We're really expanding this rapidly.
Yeah. So if you get the grant, you'd have the equipment to install this summer, huh?
Yeah, that's the plan. Anything can happen with tariffs and everything like that, but we're working hard to make sure that we're getting that equipment over here and making it usable for the entire community.
Okay, so now that the county's kind of taken this in-house, do you own the bikes or do you lease them?
We own the bikes.
All right, as well as the stations and everything.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us about that?
No, just really excited. Please check out the website, summitbikeshare.com. And we have new pricing and new ways to get memberships there.
Okay, Carl, thanks. Shane, as part of the regular meeting, there'll be a discussion on the behavioral health local authority. Is this new?
No, it's not. It's an annual requirement that we have some training for the local authority, which is the county council. This is an opportunity for Aaron Newman and his team from behavioral health to come in and talk about the governance structure, mental health services in our community, what service delivery looks like, what are the mandated services, and it's required training. You see on there it's only 15 minutes, but allows the council to ask questions of him. And then following that immediately, there's an acknowledgement of Mental Health Awareness Month, which is in May, so we'll be doing a proclamation there as well.
Okay. That's in addition to Ride a Bike Month, right?
Okay. Right, yeah, there's a lot of things going on this month, I guess.
Okay, then at about 5:25, council set to discuss and possibly approve a resolution that would amend the Summit County Housing Authority. Basically, this is to increase the number of commissioners on the Housing Authority from 5 to 7?
It is, and it was a really exciting process to follow for me, not only going through the interviews, but also the discussion after. The 13 applicants were just so impressive, and it really moved the council in how they wanted to shape that housing authority. So it was really kind of a fun conversation. There was just such a it was difficult to choose four, and much less choosing two was just a task the council didn't want to take on. So they were comfortable with who we had, that three council members and four at-large members from the community would be the best way to seat the housing authority.
Okay, and it sounds like the council's agreed on two attorneys, an executive director, and then kind of a community volunteer. How will these folks help move along the housing authority?
Well, I think that all four of the individuals that were chosen had housing authority experience. Some of them had Section 8 housing authority experience. They all knew very intimately, whether that was through their you know, personally or with their profession, how tax credits work. They seemed all passionate for housing in our community. They understood the challenges that we're faced with housing in our community. So, and not just those four, there were others as well. I actually wasn't aware of their profession, but I was there for the interviews, and it was just, we really stuck it to housing, and it was really really just an impressive group of individuals.
All right, then two public hearings at 6 o'clock. The first on the plat amendment for Silver Creek Estates. Anything controversial here?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a thing where when I ask someone from the staff how long an event something's going to take place, and they tell me 5 minutes, I get very nervous. So I don't think so, but this one shouldn't take too long.
All right. A second hearing is to change the name of Tech Center Drive. I mean, at this point, that's kind of a historical name. So who's asking to change it?
Well, there has been some discussion over the last couple of years. I think there was some agreement, and we'll see what the council has to say about this, but I've mostly talked about this with staff, but there was some agreement among the council that whether this was Dakota Pacific and a residential real area or not, that Tech Center is probably not what it's going to be, and that maybe the Tech Center, I think it's maybe could be confusing to folks eventually. I'm hoping with the public-private partnership, we have a very vibrant area with restaurants and public spaces and a library and things like that. So I think there's an opportunity there to just change that. I think some of the ideas were around that we're very close to the Olympic Park, and so there might be something we can do with a nod to the Olympics, especially with 2034 coming up. So I think it's all those things that have some momentum, and we'll see what the council has to say.
Okay, so it wasn't Dakota Pacific that asked. It was just something the staff initiated?
No, yes.
All right. And it wasn't something you could open to a name?
I think
contest,
we could do that, and that's actually was something I was thinking about, and I wondered if that might be. We did have, goodness, I think it was maybe 10 to 12 names, and so many of them were duplicates. So we've kind of narrowed it down to four. They're in but that is just a list. That's just some options for the council, and we could go through some kind of contest. We could do a lot of other things with it too.
Yeah, one of the proposals is Murdoch Peak Road, and I was just curious, will we be able to see Murdoch Peak once the development all goes in there?
Well, I was just going to immediately answer and say yes, you can see it from there. But when the development goes in, I'm not sure. I don't know what the sight lines look like. I think you still could, yes, but that's a good question.
All right. Well, hey, wanted to ask you. I mean, the news, of course, this morning is that Park City kind of changing its view on rank choice voting. Was this something that was ever even brought up with Wasatch County's or Summit County to consider?
Not since I've been here. I've been aware of ranked choice voting in my previous employment, and it's been something we discussed as a city then. I think there's some good options with it as far as saving money, not having to go through a primary. Those were probably pretty exciting. But I know Eve had to go through a process of evaluating this so she could, provide ranked choice voting as an election option for municipalities in the county. But I don't believe we talked about this last year. I don't remember it coming up. I know that we decided not to, but I don't think that the conversation was extensive.
It could have been done for a county election, right?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we didn't really have any public discussion on it.
I don't remember. I think we did have, we made a decision not to do it, but I think the discussion was very light.
All right. And also, any updates on House Bill 356? This is the redistricting of county council?
Yeah, we think that the interim session will maybe address this in May 21st. That's one thought. There, it might actually be until June. We have had some conversations with some legislators and tried to just mention some of the problems we've had with the bill. We've actually engaged with Wasatch County. I had a meeting with them yesterday about this as well. So we're trying to advocate for our positions. I believe the districting will take place in our community, and we're hoping to be able to roll into it in a lot more mild manner.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this. I mean, if the Summit County Council, if they were all Republicans, and a bunch of Democrats from Summit County complained to the state legislature that there are too many Republicans on the county council, would this be happening right now?
Well, we've been told by legislators that this isn't a partisan issue, that it's a parity issue, that it's a fairness issue, and that that the East Side has felt underrepresented. I think Councilmember Hart, when he was on with you last week, made some really good points about what this might look like if there are two, if it is a divided council. If we have three Democrats or three Republicans and two Democrats or two Republicans, I think it might really entrench folks, and that's a concern I have with when you have districts. So it's a interesting even in our conversations over the last couple of weeks, I have felt like Wasatch County was kind of out of the woods and this was going to get changed, but the legislators we talked to said they were really adamant that all districts be none at large, and that would affect Wasatch County. So I we've talked about this with them. I wanted that they haven't really been involved in our conversations, but wanted them to know that I don't think they're completely out of the woods just yet. So if that were to happen, I think we'd obviously make it happen in an appropriate way, but I don't think it would have the intended consequence that everybody thinks it would.
Okay, anything else?
Can I just add my kudos to Carl and his team? They've taken this in-house, as he mentioned. I think this is our third season, and we've asked them to do that with little or no impact to the taxpayer, and he's done a great job of that. We appreciate our sponsors, Intermountain Health and Chamber, and we just it's been a really real success, and we appreciate Carl and his team and all their hard work.
Okay, Carl Mill, Shane Scott, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
WIN, or Women's Inspired Network, is a membership-based organization that hosts monthly events. In the studio, I have Executive Director Kirsten Gunnerud. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you.
Good.
So get you real close to that mic there.
Yeah.
Maybe just start by telling us a little bit more about WIN and what it is.
The Women's Inspired Network is an organization that's been around since the late 90s, focused on women in business, but we really serve any woman who wants to participate with us. All about connection, that's our foundation, inspiring and growing together. And so we learn, we grow, we support each other, and it's a really, really special place.
Okay, so how does someone become a member if they're interested?
You can get a hold of me, kirsten@winparkcity.com, or just go to our website, winparkcity.com, and sign up.
All right, and what are the membership fees?
Membership fees right now are, gosh, what is it now? $125, I think. We're about to change that. So, yeah.
Going up, just like
everything
else?
Yeah.
Except bike share. How many members do you have?
We have about 50 paid members right now, but we have about 600 women in our community.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. As I mentioned, you do set monthly meetings.
Yeah. So we have a meetup the first Tuesday of every month, and we have a lunch and learn the third Tuesday of every month. And then for our paid members, we have a coffee every second Tuesday morning of the month. So that's time for us to just connect, not have any real agenda, but just time to hang out and ask each other questions and figure out what we need.
Okay, so potentially three Tuesdays out of the month, yeah?
Yeah,
okay.
And we'll have some other pop-up events in there and all kinds of fun things going on.
All right, well, coming up Wednesday, May 7th, not a Tuesday, you do have an event to support the Peace House. Tell us about this.
We do. So we are going to fill one of the Peace House transitional units with, I'm calling it love, which means we are going to furnish all the pots and pans, the towels, the bedding, everything, because one of the magical, beautiful things about these transitional units is when they move in, everything is new. And when they go to move to the next stop, they get to take everything with them. So we are going to provide all the items for one of those units, and that evening just really have a beautiful time at Peace House, learning about all the incredible things that Peace House does, and just filling that whole topic with as much love as we can.
Okay, well, tell us about it. I mean, do people actually show up with stuff?
Go to our website. This one's a little complicated in that we have a sign-up genius. Sign up. If you go and sign up for an item there and bring it, that is your ticket. Otherwise, if you don't want to bring an item, you're still more than welcome to come. And the idea there would be that you go to the website, sign up for an actual ticket, pay for that ticket, and then come join us.
Okay. And that's happening one night?
It's happening just May 7th. So it's unusual in that it's not a Tuesday, it's a Wednesday. And it'll be from 5:45 until 8 p.m. at the Peace House.
Okay. And then winparkcity.com for people to find that sign up. Let's see. And why the Peace House?
Why Peace House? Peace House is very close to my heart for a lot of reasons. Have some experience with friends and personally with domestic violence, and participated in helping this new facility even come to existence. It's a really, really special place. And 1 in 3 women in Utah experience domestic violence. We probably all know someone who is in that right now, and the more we understand and know about these resources, the more we can help people get support.
Okay. Let's see, you also have an upcoming Lunch and Learn. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so our Lunch and Learn is with Sue Ann Kern, who is going to work with us on our confidence when we are speaking. So we're really looking forward to that one. That one's May 20th. It starts at 11:30, and that one will be at the library. And again, sign up for that one on our website.
Okay, that's the Park City Library there?
Yes.
And what, the community room or?
In room 301.
Okay. All right, and then a little bit more difficulty, you're offering an opportunity for members to learn how to build their own websites.
Yeah, so not just learn how, but come and actually build it. So this is a 2.5-day DIY event with Jumbo John Websites. Jumbo John is amazing. My background is brand strategy. What I love about Jumbo John is they're all about the storytelling and really bringing that to life in a really beautiful way. And so these websites are beautiful, they're powerful, they will help you get your message across in a really amazing way on top of having all the back end. So when we go to Wix or Squarespace or those kinds of tools, a lot of times we don't have, we have a website up, but maybe it doesn't work that well and doesn't get found. This will take care of all of those parts and pieces. So it's a 4-page website. It involves a half day or a 3-hour pre-event of really getting your message clear, which will happen on a Thursday, June 19th. And that one will be from 5 to 8 p.m. And then on June 26th and 27th, and this is not for the faint of heart, we have two very full days of really diving in and building your website. So you'll take that message that you built on that Thursday or night, and you will then come and you will put that message into a website with a whole lot of support. And by the time you leave on the 27th, you should have a website that is up and working.
So how many staff members is Jumbo John having to help you?
Depends on
the registration.
We have three to five people that will be at the event. When you go to our website, winparkcity.com, or go to Jumbo John's website, either way, it'll link you to Jumbo John to get signed up. We only have 20 spots. This is open to anyone in the community. So this is not just for the women in the WIN community. This is for the community in general. And what is super exciting about this, my goals with WIN is not just how can we inspire and grow our business skills, but how can we grow business? And what's happening with Jumbo John is they ended up building literally new technology with their proprietary technology to bring this event together that now becomes something they can offer beyond this event to other clients and in other situations. So we kind of invented this whole thing trying to help our members that actually helps Jumbo John's business.
Okay, and they're actually offering a pretty good deal. It's not cheap.
So if you were to go get this equivalent website using a website provider, it would be at least $10,000. And this is going to be $995. So it's incredible. And half of that amount, Jumbo John is giving back to WIN. So it's also a huge fundraising event for WIN, which I'm super thankful for.
So why are they able to do it at that cost?
In part to help us, and in part to serve the community, and in part because of what they've built with this technology, it makes it doable.
So after that 4 pages, I mean, can people add on their own?
Yes, they can. They'll have the skills at that point to add on, and if they want Jumbo John's support, Jumbo John will be there to support that. We'll also, we don't have it up yet, but Jumbo John's also offering discount to utilize their services for websites if you want them to just do it through WIN. So we'll have that up in the near future as well.
Okay. I mean, I'm familiar with like WordPress. That's it. I mean, it's basically the same as any other website company out there.
What's different with Jumbo John is the way they tell stories and their proprietary kind of approach to storytelling and the tools that they have to help you uncover your archetype, your story, all of those kinds of things, which I've gone through this process now. We've been testing this out, and it's a really, really, really special thing.
Okay. And just wanted to make note that one of the things that WIN does is collect money for high school graduates.
Yes.
Tell me about the scholarship program.
Yeah. So everything we do ultimately leads to scholarships that we provide to high school seniors, women who want to extend their education and need that little bit extra to really fulfill that. So last year, we were able to do $6,000 towards scholarships. This year, I'm super excited to say we're doing $8,500. So we've got $4,000 going to Park City, $1,000 scholarships for 4 students, and then we've got an additional 6 scholarships, each of $750 across the other 3 high schools in the Wasatch Back.
Okay. How do you decide who gets the money?
So we have a whole scholarship process. We're looking for kids who really have navigated some challenges, who are really, really excited about what they want to create into in the future, and supporting that. And we work with the high schools, go through all of those lots. There's so many amazing, amazing human beings that it's really fun to read those, and a privilege to be able to hear all these young adults, I shouldn't call them kids, stories and experiences and what they want to create into in life.
Great. So is it too late for people to apply for that?
It is, I believe, too late. Park City High School, maybe there's still a window to get in. We haven't received those applications yet. But yeah, for the most part, we're through this year. But please think about it next year if you have a junior in high school.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention, Kirsten?
No. I mean, we are always looking for volunteers and people who want to join our team. And we're always looking for spaces to hold events at, partners, anyone who wants to work with us. So if anyone's interested in that, please reach out to me. And yeah, we're just super excited. So many exciting things happening.
Okay, so again, it's Kirsten at winparkcity.com.
You got it.
Okay, thanks, Kirsten.
Thank you.
Village Bicycle Project's having its annual Spring Park City Bike Drive in the studio. I've got board member for the project, Jamie May, along with the project's executive director, Joshua Popple. He joins me on the phone. Good morning to both of you guys.
Thanks, Leslie. Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
Josh, let's start with you, and maybe you can just tell us what the Village Bicycle Project is and what you do.
We are a nonprofit that sends bikes to West Africa, primarily to students, so they have better access to schools and education. And we've been around for about the last 25 years and have really been kind of functioning locally in Park City and Salt Lake City for the last 5 years.
All right. So how are you guys funded to do all this work?
Being a nonprofit, a lot of it comes from sort of private donations, grant funds, stuff like that. It's a somewhat self-financing project in that we are able to sort of generate money from bike sales in country as well. So we're fairly low budget, but pretty high impact, I would say.
Yeah. How many bikes did you collect last year? Any idea?
We've been averaging about 100 bikes from the Park City Bike Drive last year. That goes into our annual shipment from Salt Lake City, which is usually around 450 to 500 bikes. And then through partner organizations, we send about 10,000 bikes a year.
Wow, that's significant. And you said they go to West Africa. Why there?
Well, we initially started working in Ghana because it was a cheap and accessible port. And a couple of years after that, we expanded to Sierra Leone. We typically have requests from all over Africa. We could increase our bike shipping by 100% and not come anywhere near to meeting the demand. So we just have established programs in these two countries right now, and we're trying to meet as much of the demand there as possible.
And when these bikes roll off the ship there in West Africa, I mean, they're ready to go.
We actually have a team in each country of about 6 people, and the way that the bikes are packed, they're just kind of, we get as many into a 40-foot shipping container as possible. So they do need to be tuned up before they actually are distributed to the students, but that's what our team of employees does there.
Okay. And as I mentioned, Jamie, we've got this annual bike drive happening. Tell us when
Yes.
and where.
It's Saturday morning, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., over at the Walmart Staples parking lot in Kimball. It's traditionally been, our last 4 years, the drive has been over at the Canyons parking lot by the Cabriolet base, but that's all torn up and there's a lot going on over there. So we're just shifting locations for this year, maybe permanently. We'll see how it goes.
Okay, and so what is it that you're looking for from people?
So we're looking for used bikes. New bikes, if you feel like it, but generally used bikes. And Park City really has a lot of the kinds of bikes we're looking for. So these are 10, 15-year-old mountain bikes that are still in working condition, preferably. Don't have a lot of functional use for the way that people mountain bike these days, especially in a place like Park City, but are still, you know, aluminum frame, 26-inch wheeled, mountain bikes that are sturdy, tough, the old Treks and Specialized that people really can't bring themselves to get rid of or just throw out because they seem like they have value, but they don't have monetary value on a resale market, and they don't really have value as a mountain biking tool anymore. But they very much have transformational value in the hands of a person who needs reliable transportation in a rural area on a dirt road. And you know, these are the kinds of bikes that get that done. But we will also take road bikes, we'll take gravel bikes, we'll take used bike parts, used bike clothing. Typically for a lot of, you know, used bike parts that we receive, we'll get boxes of old 8-speed derailleurs or 26-inch tubes because people will say, boy, I just don't have any use for this old stuff. But that's precisely the kind of box of bike parts that has value there because these are the kinds of bikes that we're servicing in West Africa that are coming from VBP. So old bike parts, really valuable, even if they're used. Bike clothing, if it's in decent condition, we'll absolutely accept. Anything that goes to promote what we know here as established bike culture, right? Because we're not only just giving bikes away, we're setting up bike shops and teaching people how to maintain bikes. And all of that requires all the things that go along with bikes, like helmets and pumps and things that really make a bike recipient, a bike owner and a lifelong bike user.
Yeah, I was going to ask about helmets. That's something you will accept?
Yes. Helmets are, you know, of all the used bike parts, helmets are a little bit touchy and we inspect them very thoroughly. But new helmets are great, but used helmets in newish good condition, of course, are always acceptable.
All right. And then the bikes themselves, they don't need to be in working condition, but at least fixable, huh?
Yeah. And typically the kinds of bikes that I've described are the ones that can become in usable bike condition pretty easily. The old department store bikes that are, you know, have a drivetrain that's completely rusted and just won't function, those generally are not the kinds of bikes that we can do maintenance on to get them in a position where they're working. But if it's an old Specialized and it was a bike that was serviceable and the tires are flat and the chain just doesn't seem to work right with the cassette, and, you know, those kinds of bikes are generally very easily brought back into good maintenance.
All right, so where are all the bikes repaired? In Africa or here? And then
yeah,
ship?
So yeah. We'll break them down here, which means, you know, we turn all the handlebars and we drop the saddles and we do all the things that make them, take the pedals off, that make them easily compressed so we can pack as many as we can into a shipping container. And then once they get off the boat in West Africa and they become program bikes, they go to be distributed in, you know, any number of different places that have bike shops that we are building and supporting. And so they will get built up. They will get anything, you know, repaired or replaced on it that's needed. And then, you know, all the things that we do here in our own garages or in bike shops here to maintain and get bikes ready for use.
Okay. Let's see. For more information, do you have a website that people can go to?
Yes, villagebicycleproject.org has an events page. We've also just done a bunch of publicity around town and all the various community events calendars. People can just find my phone number on the website to contact me. You know, lots of times people will say, hey, I've got a garage full of old bikes, but I just can't physically get them over to you. What can we do? We will accept bikes, whether they're brought to us on Saturday morning or not. We gladly pick them up. And so please don't let transportation be, you know, a block for donating your bikes. We'd be glad to come pick them up. We just have a drop area and a specific time because it's administratively easier.
Okay. And then I believe in years past you have asked for a small stipend to help cover the shipping costs.
Exactly, and it's $25 per bike. We will gladly accept your bike without the stipend, but if you can choose to donate that to accompany the bike, it will help to offset shipping costs, which have kind of gone bananas in the last 5-6 years, just all the geopolitical reasons why shipping is expensive. You know, it's still a organization that has a mission to ship metal things across the world. You know, it takes money and it takes infrastructure to do that, so it costs money.
Okay. Josh, anything else you wanted to add?
No, just want to thank everybody in Park City that's supported this effort for the last 4 or 5 years. We really would not be able to send the container of bikes that we do every year without this bike drive, so
thank you to everyone that has come out over the last few years, and certainly thanks to Jamie for organizing all of it.
Okay. Jamie, anything else you want people to know?
No, we're just, this is the fifth year. We're slowly becoming part of the giving fabric of Park City, and it's the people that hear this message and come and give their bikes that make that possible. So we're really appreciative of that.
Okay. Jamie Main, Josh Popple, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie. Appreciate it.
Well, labor groups have gathered enough verified signatures to challenge a law banning collective bargaining for police, firefighter, and teacher unions at the ballot box this year. The Lieutenant Governor's office confirmed Monday that organizers had hit their target in the required 15 Senate districts, in addition to the more than 146,000 verified signatures statewide. The Protect Utah Workers Coalition submitted more than 320,000 signatures to county clerks earlier this month, the most gathered for any single initiative or referendum effort. The Salt Lake Tribune reports opponents now have until June 21st to convince voters to remove their signatures from referendum petitions. Barring a major shift against a repeal, the law will be on hold until the 2026 election. The bill passed with near unanimous support from the Republican supermajority in the state legislature. Governor Spencer Cox signed it into law, but says since he didn't like the bill and had hoped for a compromise. Labor groups have poured some $3 million into their efforts to repeal House Bill 267, most of it coming from national teachers' unions. The American Legislative Exchange Council and Americans for Prosperity and others have heralded Utah's law as a model for other states to follow. An organization known as Utahns for Worker Freedom is campaigning against the union referendum. The opposition has yet to report raising any money, but millions of dollars are expected to pour into groups both supporting and opposing repeal of the law. Residents can learn more about High Valley Transit State Route 224 Best Rapid Transit Project at a series of community houses. There will be two in-person and two virtual open houses to discuss various project elements, including design, inspection upgrades, and potential right-of-way needs. The first is being held today at the Richens Building at Kimball Junction at 5:30 p.m. The following in-person meeting will be held May 6th at McPullen Elementary. Registration is not required. The two virtual open houses are scheduled for Thursday, May 1st and May 8th from noon to 1:30 p.m. Registration is required for those two virtual open houses. High Valley Transit's Bus Rapid Transit Project, in partnership with the Utah Department of Transportation, Summit County and Park City, includes designing and building dedicated bus and mixed flow lanes from Kimball Junction to Old Town Park City along State Route 224. Construction is estimated to begin in the fall, with service beginning in 2028. High Valley Transit is a financial supporter of KPCW. The Summit County Council says it may appoint more residents to its Housing Authority Board of Commissioners than previously anticipated. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports.
Summit County Council member Canis Hart called it an embarrassment of riches on KPCW's local news hour last week.
In the best of ways, we had so many good candidates that really, I mean, I guess, you know, we felt like any one of them could do the job.
There were 13 applicants for two open spots. Three Summit County Council members would round out the five-member board. But now Hart says the council may appoint four people, making it a seven-member board. The council is scheduled to make appointments at its meeting Wednesday. Hart compared the Housing Authority to High Valley Transit and the North Summit Fire District, independent agencies that the council maintains some control over by appointing its own members to their boards.
We try to put council members on there to support the organization and, you know, help it get off the ground, and also to put some guardrails on there. But the bylaws for the Housing Authority really kind of give us comfort that the council can do that anyways, and the way we will approve things.
Draft bylaws for the board are also scheduled for discussion and possible approval at the Wednesday meeting. The Housing Authority's new executive director, former Summit County planner Madeline McDonough, is scheduled to lead the discussion. And Summit County's a financial supporter of KPCW. I'm Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And the Heber City Council will begin discussion of its 2026 fiscal year budget and special workshop tonight. City leaders will consider the town's budget priorities, including revitalizing downtown Heber City. Listed on Heber's tentative budget are 61 capital improvement projects, which could cost the city almost $38 million. The special workshop begins 5 p.m. in the City Council chambers. Residents can also attend online.